Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing?
Aha, feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, huzzah, rah, it's time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. It's been a fun week of basketball so far. Whole lot of football is happening now, so that part's neat. So if you're just a general sports fan, exciting time of the year. We're entering fall season, all that good stuff. But W season hitting the stretch run. I think everyone has around 6 or 7 games left in the year, which is cool. But for today, a simple format. We're going to catch up on the latest news. We got some awards to talk through for the month of August, and then we will answer questions from the Dunker Spot mailbag. So thank you to those who sent in questions. As always, you don't need a specific prompt from us. If you are watching a game or doing some chores around the house or whatever the case may be, and you have a basketball thought you want to toss our way, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We'll get to them. Again, a thank you to those who sent in questions. Without us asking, and as we sent out a prompt on social media, I've got a few responses as well, so we appreciate y'all. But first, on the news front for the month of August, we got player of the month, we got rookie of the month, we got coach of the month. On the player on the player of the month side, excuse me, Nafisa Collier is your Western Conference rep, averaging 22.4 points, 9.1 rebounds, 3.9 assists, and 1.1 steals across her 7 games in August. The Lynx went 6-1 of those games. She is your West rep for player of the month. And in the East, Indiana Fever rookie sensation Caitlin Clark winning the award. 24 points, 5.2 rebounds, 8.5 assists, and a steal per game. The Fever went 5-1 in August. Any surprises, any complaints?
Do you have any surprises or any complaints?
Not really. Like, I think the West field was a lot more limited than the East field. And so I think if you were doling out the award, it was going to be Fee or Asia. And once you factor in Nafisa Collier, pretty much averaging 25-13 across 2 straight games against the Aces in August, both wins for the Minnesota Lynx. And the fact that I didn't even notice this until I was doing some research for the month of August earlier today. I think the Lynx were the only team to go above 500 in the West in August, which I didn't have on the bingo card. And so you factor that in, Fee doing playing well, or at the very least among the major candidates for this one, was the only one to go above 500. Not a surprise that she ended up getting the award over Asia, though Asia's averages were nuts. 26-11, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks in the month of August, but the Aces were 3-4, and again, that includes 2 straight losses to the Minnesota Lynx. So if you care about the head-to-head, that's probably where it swung there. The East one was interesting to me. And I say interesting more so just because, again, you could go a lot of different ways with this one. I think Caitlin was a solid choice. It's hard to argue with 24-5-9, basically. But it's just like she perked up. Breanna Stewart perked up. Kelsey Mitchell, her teammate, quietly second among scorers in the W in the month of August. You go on down the line, like I think I mentioned on the last pilot, how well Tina Charles had been playing. Or I mentioned on my own timeline as I was trying to figure out who's going to win player of the week. Tina Charles has been on a heater. And so I think it's like 18-12 for her in the month of August. So like a lot of different ways you could have went. But with the Fever being as supercharged as they are post-Olympic break, their top offense in the league. Caitlin Clark has spearheaded that. Again, the scoring and assists blend. 2 20-10 games in the month of August. I understand why she got it.
I agree.
Oh, there we go. We got the quick agreement. The Rookie of the Month award also went to Caitlin Clark. Again, just read out her stats. Other notable rookies in the month of August, Angel Reese averaging 12.1 points, 16.1 rebounds, nearly 7 offensive rebounds a game in the month of August, which easily led to W. She was second to Tina Charles in defensive rebounds per game. Rakia Jackson averaging 16.6 points per game. That was second among rookies in the month of August. 57% on twos, 50% from three on over 4 attempts, 79% for the line, 4 boards and 2 assists for her. But Caitlin Clark with the Rookie of the Month and Player of the Month sweep, which we don't see all that often in the W. I will pose a question to you, Steve, that one we've discussed before outside of the podcast. But as I was talking to some online pals earlier today, it was a question posed to me. How high could you argue for Caitlin Clark in this MVP. I struggle to say race now because that word is just, people don't like the race portion of this, considering Asia Wilson's having the season that she's having. She is the heavy front runner to win the award, and rightfully so. But MVP ballots are 1 through 5. And so how high could you reasonably argue Caitlin?
Can I just say, like, here's the thing. You need to put 5 names on the ballot. I've said Asia Wilson is the MVP for at least almost 2 months now. They still run the race.
Even if someone's far ahead, yeah.
They still have to run the race. So there are names, and that's the fun part for me. But apparently no one else is having fun with it. I think like 2 weeks ago? So I had my 5 names pretty much locked in. It was Asia, Nafisa Collier, Sabrina Ionescu, Alyssa Thomas, and Kalia Copper. And I did state, hey, if the Fever make this run to 6, there's a really good chance you could just put Caitlin Clark 5. Mm-hmm. And I would probably do so because, I mean, it's been insane numbers. They're winning. You've turned the season around. She's averaging 28-7 almost in their wins. Mm-hmm. We've seen 24-8-5 in August, 20-12-6 in July. Like there's a significant impact as far as her play improving, the Fever improving, and things going well. So I would understand that, especially the winning comes along with it. Now the winning has to come along with it. If the Mercury make a surge and the Fever go backwards, then I think it would be a flip flop for me personally. Or if the Storm make a run, you can make an argument for Neka Ngumike. Like, but I feel like that's the bit.
Okay.
How high could you possibly argue? This is going to make you mad. This is going to make everyone mad. There is a world where she could be 3rd.
Okay.
I'm not saying that's my thought process right now. I'm just preparing anyone out there for that to be the case. One, we have a winner, pretty much. We can agree on that, right?
Yes.
You know what typically happens when we have that?
More discussion about everyone else.
Slash some of them votes get a little funny. It's no disrespect, but well, Asia going anyway, so you know. Hey,
let me use this as an opportunity to shout out someone else who's having a great season, and I get annoyed by it every time it happens.
Yeah, so again, this is me preparing you for what could potentially happen. Now, there are some people who are saying that Sabrina is no longer the Liberty MVP rep, and it's Breanna Stewart because Stewie is just absolutely cooking and making shots. Let me just dive deeper. Voter fatigue. Who was the MVP last year, Nikias?
That was Breanna Stewart.
Well, .. Uh-huh. Now we get into do you respect the Connecticut Sun? Do you respect the Seattle Storm? Do we see a split between Alyssa Thomas and Neka Ngumike?
Oh, well, I've already floated that, a couple weeks ago where I'm just like, hey, are people just bored by Alyssa Thomas? Because she's still like spearheading an elite defense and she's still doing a bunch of playmaking and yada, yada, yada. So to your point, the fact that she isn't having the like historic triple double run, and it just feels like in terms of general discourse, like the Sun fall behind, the Liberty are doing this. Wow, where'd the Lynx come from? Hey, what's wrong with the Aces? The Storm are new. Hey, here come the Fever. It's like the Sun are like a top 3 team, but in terms of how they're talked about or how often they're talked about or what the volume is when they're talked about, they're like 5th or 6th, which isn't really fair to them. So yeah, if you're not keyed in on what Alyssa Thomas is doing on a night-to-night basis, would I be surprised if a voter has Alyssa Thomas like 6th? Would not be surprised. Would I be angry that voter had her 6th? Yes, I would. But again, I don't have an official ballot. I just react to the stuff. So
yeah, there's a world where we get some splits because someone might salute Jewel Lloyd. Someone might salute Arike. Someone might salute Aaliyah Boston. Like there's a world where some of this split can happen. So I would not be surprised if she were able to rise to 3rd.
Okay. Can, or you argue this highest 3rd, you personally, again, neither one of us have official ballots, at least not that I'm aware of, but neither one of us have official ballots. You are kind of, you kind of have Caitlyn like in that 5-6 mix right now. Do I have that right?
As of right now, yeah.
Okay. Got you. I think we're similar in that regard. Like the names are different, but I think we both have her within that like 5-6 or 5-7 type range.
Well, yeah, because you got Stewie in and you got Aneka in.
I sure do, man. I sure do. I will say, to your point,
like guards.
I do respect guards. Don't do this to me. I'm okay, just saying.
Hold on. Like, no, before you go, I didn't mean to cut you off. How many guards do you have on your all W first team or your all W first team all defense? I could speak.
Well, for all W first team right now, I do not believe I have a guard right now.
Boom. Defense?
That doesn't mean I don't respect them. As far as defense goes, let me pull the notes back up. to your point, like it's either 0 or 1. Cause I will say, like, I think Dejanay has been the best perimeter defender in the league this year. And so she's you know, similar to Caitlin, she's been like that 5-7 range for me in terms of like the all defense spots. And Seattle's kind of hurting my feelings with their defense as of late. And Dejanay, again, has been sticky of screens. She's taking on tough assignments. And then she's just stealing everything in sight on top of that. Like, steals aren't always the mark of good defense. But when you have that kind of on-ball consistency on top of the event creation for, again, elite defense, like, she might just end up on my fake first team ballot. So it's 0 or 1. So I understand the point that you're making.
Again, you can get back to your point, but who leads the WNBA in steals?
I believe that is Arike Ogunbowale. Still.
Salute. All right.
Gosh darn it. But no, like, I think while I have Caitlin in the 5-7 range, like, I think for me, I could argue her as high as 4 and feel good about it. Like, I don't know if I could, in good conscience, go to like 3 for her yet. Again, that's me who does not have an official ballot. Okay. Not saying the case ain't out there, but go ahead.
Well, let's play a game that gets us in trouble every time.
Okay.
What would have to happen for Nekias Duncan to argue Caitlin Clark 3rd for MVP?
For her to slide up to 3rd, that would be Fever. If not win out, they at the very least continue this kind of win pace. We're losing one game every like 4 times out type beat. Close the season with 1 loss, basically. You do that, the Fever continue to be the best offense in the W, and by proxy, they win the Caitlin minutes, as annoying as the case that is for you. They have done that since that 2-9 start. But if that swings and then your overall season number is now, not only have the Fever been better with Caitlin on the floor, the Fever have also a positive net rating on top of that with the box score numbers, plus the winning. If they do win to this degree, that means they get at least 1, if not 2 straight wins over the Aces. So you're looking at the Fever potentially getting up to 5 if the Storm continue to slide as well. If you're looking at top 5 seed, box score, the efficiency has been above league average all year long, but now the 3-point shooting is legitimately good in terms of percentages. Yeah, you get the on-off stuff, advanced stuff, perk stuff a little bit more on top of that. That's how I'd feel more comfortable getting up to 3. And even with that, it would need to be that plus, like, Stewie slides again. Because, like, I don't foresee... Like, I do think MVP is just between Asia and Fee. And I go Asia right now. But in this world in which the Fever, like, they sweep the Aces in the regular season with yada yada, Aces dip... It goes from Asia's like the far away MVP to like she probably still wins it, or it goes to Fee, but it's still like those two. Like, I don't know if Caitlin can catch Asia and Fee for MVP. What would they be able to do? And then you think about how important those players have been to their teams on both ends of the floor all year long. Like, there is an element of two-way impact that I don't know if Caitlin can reach, even if, you know, I've acknowledged this year, like, the defense has been so much better from where it was at the beginning of the year. But it'll take a good little bit for me to get to 3rd and be comfortable about it.
Okay.
So that is where I am. I appreciate the question, though.
Did you?
No. I think it's a fair question to ask because I think one very cliche thing to say, but it's true. It is a testament to how well Caitlin has played and overall how well the Fever have turned this thing around to where we can have an earnest conversation about this. And it's not just Caitlin's having a great rookie season. She's super exciting. And therefore, let's pigeonhole her into a conversation. Like, the play from her and the Fever at large warrants at least having the conversation. Even if, again, we both agree she's more in like the 5-6, 5-7 range than up to 3. We can have the conversation as a testament to what they've done. I think it's a fine and fair question. And that's just where I land.
Hooray.
Not hooray. That's a good bit. Just to roll out some numbers very quickly on the player of the month front, the rookie of the month front. Since we're already talking about Caitlin. Again, Fever went 5-1. They were plus 47 in 216 minutes with her on the floor. They were a minus 3 in 24 minutes with her off, which is just a hilarious thing to see. She is not getting much of a break in these games. Two 20-point 10-assist games, which led to W. Odyssey Sims and Courtney Williams were the only other players in August to log a 20-point 10-assist game. Caitlin leads the W with 7 2010 games. The rest of the league has 7. And the only other player in the W with multiple 2010 games this season, 20 points and 10 assists, to be clear, is Jackie Young of the Las Vegas Aces. Also in the month of August, Caitlin Clark led the W per second spectrum in pick and rolls ran with 209. Any trip featuring a Caitlin pick and roll was 1.05 points per possession. The league average is 0.88. So to give you a sample of just how, not only how effective those pick and rolls were, but how effective those pick and rolls were relative to the rest of the league. And naturally, her primary pick and roll partner was Aaliyah Boston. Led all duels and pick and roll reps with 121, 1.06 points per possession on those trips, also an elite mark. For Nafisa Collier, again, Lynx went 6-1. They were plus 77 in her 229 minutes on the floor, a minus 21 in 51 minutes with her off the floor. Talked about in the last episode, like how do we feel about the second unit, et cetera. Go back to that podcast to get a more nuanced conversation there. 4 games of 20 points on over 60% shooting from the field in the month of August for Nafisa Collier, which also led the W. A quick shout out to Across the Timeline for their stat filter and their stat search engine. Brittany Griner currently leads the W with 9 games of 20 plus points on 60% shooting or better from the field. And as mentioned a little bit earlier, 25 points, 12.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 1.5 steals across those 2 games against the Aces, which I think ultimately helped swing the player of the month case in the Western Conference for Nafisa Collier over Asia Wilson. And with that, one more award to quickly discuss. Christy Sides named coach of the month. Again, Fever went 5-1. They were first in offense. They were 7th in defense and 2nd in net rating, 2nd in effective field goal percentage and true shooting. Really good rebounding team, 3rd overall in rebound rate, but 4th in offensive rebound rate, 4th in defensive rate. Only 2 clutch games in the month of August, won both of those games, and they currently lead the W in clutch wins, which is night and day from where the Indiana Fever were last season. They were in a bunch of close games, particularly early in the year, a lot of tight fourth quarters. They were able to roll that out. So encouraging season-wide to see them close out some games. Any surprise with Christy Sides getting the coach of the month nod?
No. I think it's, again, the Indiana Fever were 1-8 to start the year. We got the 2-9. They got the 3-10. They're 18-16. They're above 500 for the first time since what year again?
It certainly ain't this year or last year.
2016, I believe, was the, if I quote it that way. It's been a while. I totally understand. And I think it's, you know, obviously the winning helps, but this is a team that was not very good defensively, was a team you could attack, and, you know, you pop on a Fever game now, and it's Lexi Hall chasing over screens, and Alyssa Smith showing high hands, Aaliyah Boston helping. Like, they have played much better as a unit on both ends of the floor. They have more buy-in and more execution, more activity. A lot of the credit, obviously, is probably going to go to Caitlin Clark for some people, but everyone has done their part, and everyone has played their role, and you've gotten everyone to buy into what you're doing, what you're trying to accomplish. And you get Kelsey Mitchell playing at this high of a level. You get Aaliyah Boston playing at this high of a level. You get Lexi Hull making these type of threes and making these plays defensively. You understand your best lineups. You shorten the rotation. There's a lot of good coaching things that have taken place mm-hmm. to help the Fever have this turnaround. And I think that shouldn't get lost in the sauce. And so I imagine if the Fever keep winning, there will be a push for Christy Sides to be coach of the year. Very intrigued to see how that goes. I think there are three candidates. Mm-hmm. At least I have my top three in my head. There's no disrespect. Again, when we do our awards thing, I will obviously dap up every coach I possibly can. But I think Cheryl Reeve, I think Sandy Mandello, I think Christy Sides will end up being the names.
Okay. That makes sense.
Do I know the order? Absolutely not. But they're typically gets rewarded for, hey, we didn't think this was going to be a thing. And this is no disrespect to Stephanie White, but hey, who was the coach of the year last year?
I believe that was Stephanie White.
I dropped the stat on a different pod, but yeah, it's
you did. Go back through the Dunker Spot library in which Steve went down the rabbit hole on, hey, if you win the award that next year, congratulations for winning that award. It's generally how that goes. But obviously talking about the month of August, but zooming out, bouncing off of what Steve said, getting off to that 1-8, then 2-9 start. Since June 3rd, once they got past that ridiculous scheduling stretch where they were playing all the elite defenses at the same time, and it was just really tough. The Fever are 16-7. They have the best offense in the W. The defense, 10th, but you filter for August. And again, it's like 3 points per 100 possessions lower than what that overall number is. So it's trending in the right direction. They are one of six teams with a positive net differential since June 3rd. The Liberty, naturally, number one. The Liberty, the Lynx, the Storm, the Aces, the Sun, and then the Fever, in that order, are your net ratings leaders since June 3rd. So they have just been a good team for quite a while now. And I, for one, am shocked that being able to practice and also just having time to figure out who plays better with who and what you want to run, you have an opportunity to fix some things. And that what you do in the first month of the season does not always mean that you are just stuck. And it's very neat. It's very neat. What's up, Steve?
Nah, I'm going to let you rock with that one. You good. We're going to revisit that, what you do in the first month during the NBA season, though.
Wow. Okay. I'm just saying, you don't have to write the book. That's all I'm saying. But no, the NBA Fever playing well. Is who would be the other candidates for this? If it wasn't going to be Christy, is it just Cheryl or Sandy at that point?
Are you asking me one name outside of the three names I gave, or?
Yeah, I'm just quickly thinking, like, hey, who did the good things in August? But yeah, I think that would just be your coach of the year list. Excuse me.
I think if Connecticut had gone like 6-1, Stephanie White would have had a really good argument having to integrate that lineup together. Hmm. And playing defense at that level. The Liberty have done some pretty good things. So I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I got you. The four teams in August with a positive net rating, the Liberty at plus 13.2. The Lynx at plus 10.7, the Fever at plus 9.3, and the Stephanie White-led Connecticut Sun at plus 4.8. The Atlanta Dream and the Phoenix Mercury both flirted with neutral at minus 0.5. But yeah, though it would have been out of those choices, and understandable, again, that Stephanie White was able to get it done. Now, we move to the Dunker Spot mailbag. Once again, thank you to those who sent in questions. You can always send us basketball thoughts and questions at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. That is dunkerspot@yahoo.com. Our first question going to come from our dear pal Tej, who says, hello, Steve and Nikias. I hope this mailbag question finds you well. Hooping it up and embracing your balance in the game of life. Okay. We find ourselves coming to the end of the season. I have found myself annoyed by the Dream all season because of their inconsistency, but more so recently because of their apparent push to make the playoffs. As a fan, I'm just like, put me out of my misery and just let the players rest. Tank, if you will. My question is, what are your thoughts on tanking? Are you for, against, indifferent? And how do you think thoughts on tanking differ from a fan perspective versus an inside the organization / player / coaching perspective?
Great question. I think there's two things. Everything is kind of coincided, right? First of all, the Atlanta Dream got healthy post-Olympic break, mm-hmm. as they were absolutely positively not healthy going into the Olympic break. And so, yes, you have a whole new team. Number two, to the tanking point, you tell me how much fun it's going to be to walk into a locker room with Tina Charles and Ryan Howard and Alicia Gray and Jordan Canada and be like, hey, appreciate y'all fighting and working through it to get back on the court. We're not trying to win anymore. You just tell me how that scenario is going to go. I'm just going to give you a spoiler alert. It's not going to go very well. So I think if you're this close at this stage in the season, you compete and work hard and try and get a playoff spot. Why not? You know, I understand the fan perspective of, you know, draft picks and everything. The rest point, I mean, we're at the end of the road with the season. Mm-hmm. What is this rest going to do for me? I'm trying to compete. I'm trying to win. I'm trying to make up for what has happened so far. I think we're better than what we've been. So let's show it. Give ourselves a chance and go to the dance. Like, that's the whole point. The whole goal is to go to the playoffs. Like, you don't want to. I've been in two scenarios where you had to make a mad dash trying to get the 8 seed. And everyone's like, well, what are you doing? Who cares? And it's like, I care very much. I'm working very hard to try and help our team do the best we can, because that's the whole point of it. I've been in a scenario where the season ended very early. And let me tell you, that part is worse. Because you still have to do all the work. Like, you can't just be like, well, we're not trying to win anymore, so hands off. No, you're grinding and busting your tail and going to practice and watching this tape, and you get no results for the outcome, and it's painful. It is just painful. So, no, I salute the Atlanta Dream for continuing to compete. I salute the Washington Mystics for continuing to compete. I salute the Dallas Wings for continuing to compete. Shout out to the Sparks. Okay. You put the work in. You treat the game the right way. It will come back to you. I just, if you're this close, why?
Yeah, I feel you. I would say, like, with the Atlanta Dream specifically, to add on to your point, the important context to add is, like, there really is no incentive for the Atlanta Dream to tank at this point, because the Washington Mystics have their first round pick. And while this upcoming draft class is supposed to be very good, like, I'm certainly not enough of an authority to speak on, like, how good are these early second round options going to be? Like, historically, like, a lot of those second rounders don't make the team, much less, like, factor in as immediate rotation pieces, stuff like that. So there isn't even the real incentive to, hey, let's make sure we can draft 13th or 14th, or I guess 15th, considering, or, you know, trying to anticipate what the expansion draft and what that's going to mean heading into next year. So for the Dream specifically this year, like, they kind of, if they bottom out and they finish 10th or 11th, you're helping the Mystics. So, like, that part doesn't matter. As far as, like, a broader concept of, like, how I personally feel about tanking, I've never quite understood. Well, let me not say I didn't understand, because I do understand. I am fine with it. I think it's important to understand that tanking, if you want to use that term, like, that is very much a top-down decision, and not a players don't want to win anymore decision. And so, like, if players are on a tanking team, that doesn't mean they don't care about winning. At least that'd be my read from the outside looking in. But for me, like, as a team building head, I know I would not want to be stuck in the, we're the seventh or sixth seed type rut in the NBA or the WNBA. And so if I feel like that's where our ceiling is and we don't have immediate pathways to making the jump from sixth to fourth or sixth to third, and then going from third to first, whatever that case may be, like, I am much more okay with, all right, let's take the step back here. Like, Steve pokes at me all the time with how I feel about, like, the Chicago Bulls. And it's like, hey, I don't think this is worth, like, fully investing in. Obvious caveat that is a lot easier for me to say that as person on microphone versus person in the organization. But for me, I'm just like, nah, I don't think this is a championship ceiling, or like a conference final ceiling at this point without a whole bunch of breaks. Let's try to reconfigure some things. Like, Steve Pope did me recently. Like, dog, they just did that. So, like, it's not easy to turn that around. But, like, in general, like, I'm not opposed to the concept. If you are in a salary cap sport and the draft exists, and naturally I have thoughts about both of those as concepts, but we'll leave that for another pod. But within those constraints, if you ain't got the money to sign a superstar, and your best bet at turning around is drafting a superstar, and you have lottery odds that can help you potentially draft the superstar and have that team control, if you're not an immediate title contender, it's at least worth considering how realistic is it for us to, you know, go to Miami route where we nail late lottery, middle of the first round, and we can kind of build within and just kind of grow internally versus, okay, the draft might just be our only pathway and we need to draft high. Let's just turn this around. So like, I don't begrudge teams for making that step.
Okay, I'm going to unuse the T word.
Okay.
Just because it has a negative context.
Got you.
I understand knowing it's not your year. And I understand knowing, okay, we're only going so far with this and protecting your future. I think if you're going to go that route, you do need to make sure you build your roster in a significant way to where your young players are going to get the lion's share of the minutes. And the veterans you have understand the assignment to a degree, if that makes sense. If you are in and you have a roster that is can compete, they're going to compete. You can't be mad when they compete and they're not horrible. You know what I'm saying? If you're up there making decisions and thoughts, that's going to be a byproduct. So I there's value in that, but I just think you put yourself in a tough spot if you're trying to sell that. Because every time you say something, I'm like, okay, you go up to the top floor and you present that plan and you get a sheet back circled with what the team will make if they are the 7 seed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. it's a silent ride home for you, bud. I'll put it that way. Yeah.
Understandable. And again, this is why, like, it's an obvious thing. Like, I'm literally on a podcast. But, like, that's why I'm always intentional about saying, hey, this is a lot easier for me to think about in theory than it would be if I was actually making those decisions. Because you are talking about not just the health of your basketball team and trying to make sure you build a contender, all this stuff. Like, there are so many livelihoods at stake depending on how a rebuild goes or when you decide to do that. Like, that's a lot of, like, human element to factor in that I don't think fans even pretend to think about. Which, understandable, they're fans. But, like, no, there's a lot more that goes into it versus, you know, on the NBA side, this team is perpetually 43-39. They should try to get a superstar. Blow it up. Like, it's never that simple.
Yay, dream. Yeah.
So, yeah, Teach, get ready for that fight to the 8 seed, bud. I think that's where we land with them. But it's tanking as a concept. Like, I am fine with pivoting. But, again, it's worth noting it's not as easy to do that. And to Steve's point, it's certainly not as easy to sell that. There we go. Next one going to come from Max, who says, hi, Nikias and Steve. I have a question for you, which stems from me seeing videos on Twitter of Yusuf Nurkic shooting threes. While I know not to take stock in summer workout videos, it got me thinking about how Mike Budenholzer might want certain guys to change how they play. So I was wondering what you guys think Bud's impact might be on the Suns' offense. Also, more specifically, where the three-point volume might come from, because it has to increase with Bud given his past teams. Appreciate the thoughts.
I guess it just depends on what he's going to bring and which way he's going to go offensively. We've seen what he's done in Atlanta. We saw what he did in Milwaukee. He's pivoted to get the most out of players. And I think having the versatility of that big three to a degree could open up the playbook. And I think it's based on what Phoenix didn't have offensively at times last year. I think you imagine that will be something that he will try to embrace. And I think it's a big opportunity. I think him understanding the greatness of those three and the moldability of them is where I think we'll see a lot of movement. I think we'll get a mix of post-ups. I think we'll see spacing, pick and roll. That's where I'm trying to see. You know, that's where my mind is going, if that makes sense.
I was just going to say, like, to your adaptability point, like, one, I think that's what makes Bud such a good coach. And I think that's gone underrated in light of some of the conversations surrounding him before the Bucks broke through and won the title. But again, not going to go down that rabbit hole again. But as I was trying to do some, like, Bud research and just looking at different team stats and trying to figure out what trends are, what you can expect to change, et cetera, there wasn't a lot that stood out to where, like, Bud teams do this outside of, like, naturally you don't want your team to foul, stuff like that. And even then, like, I think every coach in the league has that ideal. Hey, can we contest and defend, keep things in front, do that without fouling? So it's not like exclusive to Bud. The biggest or one of the more notable things that stood out to me is that Bud teams generally don't crash the offensive glass like that. Like, they're very selective about doing that. And so going back through the Atlanta years, the Milwaukee years, the highest finish in offensive rebound rate for a Bud team, I think, was 13th. No top 10 finishes, and they had multiple finishes like in the bottom 10, in the bottom five, stuff like that. And so looking at that, and the Phoenix Suns were, you know, if you use NBA.com, they were 9th in offensive rebound rate. If you're using clean the glass to filter out the garbage time stuff, they were 8th in offensive rebound rate. The first thing that comes to mind is there's probably going to be even more of an emphasis on Phoenix transition defense. And it may just be, Nurk, if you're already in the dunker spot or something like that, you can go crash for one. But other than that, we're getting back. Let's try to build our shell, that type of thing. So that's more like transition philosophy more so than directly impacting the offense. But that may impact like where the guys are spaced and what they're doing immediately after shots go up. So like that stood out. To the three-point volume point, I would imagine that had to have been or has to be a very early conversation that he has with Kevin Durant in particular. I think that's going to be the easiest piece of, hey, you can take more of these because KD can take whatever shots he wants anyway. And I think it was, what, 5.4 three-point attempts per game last year. Not saying that this will happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's like, hey, we want you to get 7 or 8 of these up a game. Can we cut some of the mid-range volume and take a step back with some of these option screens that you're already getting? We're going to keep that in the playbook. Can you catch these at the three-point line versus a step or two inside and curl it in? Like, those would be, I wouldn't be surprised if those are slight shifts that you see. And then just in general, like, as Steve alluded to, just more of the off-ball usage for KD, for Devin Booker, especially with Tyus Jones there. There's an opportunity to get both of those guys off the ball at the same time, even if that's just, hey, let's just run floppy and let's see who cracks and see what we can get. But that would be where I would go there. I think the three-point volume bump, you start with KD. To the use of Nurkic point in the question, he's already experimented both in Phoenix and even going back to Portland, just experimented with some above the break threes since they use him as a handoff hub anyway. So, like, would I be surprised if we see Yusuf Nurkic 2.3 three-point attempts per game this season? Like, no, I wouldn't be shocked by that. How much of an impact that's going to have, that's a different conversation. You can see like a slight uptick with Yusuf Nurkic, but I think Kevin Durant's probably going to be your inflection point. If the Suns are suddenly like top 12 in three-point rate or top 10 in three-point rate, KD's probably going to be the biggest driver of that. I guess that, and then going to Devin Booker, like just increasing his comfort with taking pull-up threes, since that's kind of been like an up-and-down deal for him during his Phoenix tenure. Not necessarily the ability to make the shot, but more so like, is he willing to just, oh, they're in drop, I'm just going right into this versus let me get this guy on my hip, let me operate in the mid-range area and get to this jumper that I really like. So those would be my thoughts on that front.
Well, I think the big thing for Coach Bud is he's always found a way to kind of get a team to have a level of versatility, get them to win in different ways. And I think if they can kind of get some of that movement, it's going to be a different roster, but if they can get the flow and they can get some of the ball movement, because we saw some of that grow in Milwaukee at times. I know I joked that the offense was unseasoned at times, but when they did get the movement and they got the flow, they were able to play with their three players together, you know, getting some cuts, flowing into double drag actions, emptying out of side, slips. Like, I think there's a lot of creative things they can do. And I think that having the versatility of those three players together is where I point to, okay, I think they're going to have some versatility. I want to see what it looks like, but that will be fun.
I got you. Can I ask you a very quick Phoenix question?
What's up?
Just because something that I've like seen on my timeline off and on all offseason. And again, this is just, I see it on Twitter. That doesn't mean it's a real like talking point within the organization. So make the very obvious caveat there. But like, especially following the Tyus Jones signing, just the bubblings of, hey, do we want to bring Bradley Beal off the bench as a let's conserve the help during the regular season?
No, like, okay, no. There we go. Stop you right there.
Okay.
What?
There we go.
What?
Yeah. Hey, that's. Hey.
What? If we had a soundboard, I would get that clip so fast. What? Who said this?
I'm about to call out at. So I'm just saying, it's just a conversation piece that I've seen.
Hey, you know, how you do that? You start Bradley Beal, you sub him out early, and then you bring him in with the second unit. What are we talking about?
Okay, well, there's your answer. And to be clear, like, the majority, like, responses that I'm seeing, but like, majority is on your side, like, absolutely not. And then you do have the other side is where, like, hey, he can still close games, et cetera. But you get Tyus, get Devin Booker off the ball. You try to get a defender in there or try to size up a little bit at the three if you can. They go from there. So I was like, huh, let me at least toss this your way.
Cool idea. You tell Bradley Beal that. You walk up to Bradley Beal and tell him that. Hey, you go to the front office and say, hey, I know y'all made this trade. We think about cutting him off the bench.
Well, man. Yeah. What's he going to do? Demand the truth. No. But, no.
Okay. All right. We'll do it.
Say, we got a no Drake clause too, bud. It's called our phone. It's on DND. But all right. Next one going to come from Brent as we shift to the W side of the program. What would be the hardest matchup for the Minnesota Lynx in the playoffs?
I feel like this is a Nekias-led question, but... you know, they have had success against a lot of very good teams this season, and that should go unnoticed. I think there might have been a world where you probably say the Las Vegas Aces, but they just showed, hey, I think we got a shot.
we can make y'all move them puppies. Like, hey,
they have had a fun time against the Liberty at times this year. I'm going to go with Connecticut. I'm going to go with the Sun, if only because the Lynx have done such a great job offensively, and I've praised them time and time again, and I'll continue to do it with their movement, with their flow, having people that can pass, dribble, and shoot. The Sun can just kind of bring that into the mud with a level of physicality that, and if they get then a playoff series and they just make it muddy throughout, like, I think a lot of the Lynx offensive adjustments was based on what the Sun did to them last year in the playoffs. I don't know if all that's gone away. So I would probably go Sun 1, Liberty 2. Because while they've had fun, I mean, if the Liberty are scoring the basketball, then it becomes interesting.
Yeah.
And I'd probably say Aces.
Yeah, that's from there. Okay, understood. I guess related to that, we'll recycle a question real quick. If it's going to the first round, looks like at this rate, they'll be facing either Indy or Phoenix. Who would you say is a tougher opponent for them right now?
I don't know. I have to delete my first answer. you know, I don't. See, here's the problem, right? I believe that Minnesota can bother Indiana. I'm going to go Phoenix.
Okay. Phoenix has the tougher matchup for them?
Yeah.
Okay.
They have BG and a bunch of competitors that just might not care about anything you're doing.
Okay.
Like, you get a BG game and a COG game, and
oh no. Well, this was fun. Guess we ain't got to go home because we already home. So,
not saying that would happen, but you know what I mean? Like, that,
no, I understand.
The Mercury have a high nonsense factor. Like, I feel like if I'm the Lynx, okay, do we just take away a big or do we just try and stop Kelsey Mitchell? And then do we just make them move a lot on the other end of the floor? Cool switching and rotations you got there. Would you like to continue making them?
Keep doing that. Yeah. Oh, no. Okay. Fair answers there. I would say within the first round set, like, I probably with you on Phoenix. If for no other reason than, like, BG has just been really good offensively this year. Like, there is, you know, within a playoff setting, you're talking about a best of three in the first round. There is a scenario in which we are opening the game, just feeding BG. Oh no, Alanis Smith is in foul trouble. And then you kind of go from there. And to your point, like, Hawk can take a game over, Diana Taurasi can knock down shots, and Tosh Cloud could drive, yada, yada, yada. And so, like, they have that kind of versatility, but to your point, the competitiveness and the toughness as well. And like the overall, just the size element, offensively at the very least, is where I say, hey, that could get interesting within a playoff lens. Zooming out though, my first thought was Connecticut. And then I quickly pulled up the Minnesota their game log and stuff. So, hey, how did they do against these opponents? So they are 0-2 against the Connecticut Sun. They are 3-1 against the Aces. They are 1-1 against the Liberty, with their third matchup coming on September 15th.
Well, actually, would they technically be 2-1 because the Commissioner's Cup did exist? Or am I getting my math wrong?
Hey, that's fair, because that wouldn't count as the championship game wouldn't count as a regular season game, so that's why it's not in the game in this game log. But you are correct, which is also very funny because I'm on Basketball Reference right now. It's very funny to see Commissioner's Cup game, but because the title game doesn't factor in, you just don't see that one. So that's a good bit. But yeah, so 2-1 against the Liberty, to Steve's point, because that game did happen, even if it doesn't count in the standings itself. They are 3-1 against the Storm. And so considering Connecticut is the only team that they have not beat, as I look at the schedule real quick, I think they are quite literally the only team they have not beaten this season. Got to beat Connecticut by default.
This man went pure logic.
No, because I think the defense, like we all watched that playoff series last year. It's like, oh, well, this is what it can look like. And again, this year, like there is just a physicality that they provide. And going back to the rebounding point, that the Lynx have not been a good rebounding team this year. And Connecticut, for all the questions I may have about like what are the lines going to look like, what is the offensive flow, yada yada yada, they're going to beat you up on the offensive glass. Bree Jones going to get you some. Alyssa Thomas is going to get you some. Dejanay going to crash in. Dewanna Bonner, depending on where she's spaced on the floor, she will crash in for the corner. And so that could get hazy by default. And again, all the things that they could throw at Minnesota defensively. So like there are just basketball things, but yeah, it is also just funny looking at the box score like, oh, this is like actually tracks because they haven't beat them yet. So, yeah, I think Connecticut's the overall answer right now as far as the toughest matchup. And in the first round, like, I keep an eye on what Phoenix will look like there. But all due respect to the Indiana Fever. But there we go. This one coming from Twitter. Shout out Jazz the Terrible. That's the ad. That is literally the ad. I'm not calling Jazz Terrible. Safe space. Hey, there was a picture tweeted out from that account earlier this week. Hey man, I ain't responding to it, but I saw that. But anyway, what is a realistic path to contention for the Wings given the roster construction? Do you foresee the Twin Towers getting broken up in favor of more mobile perimeter defenders?
I feel like here's the thing. You got a lot of questions that were submitted to you specifically, and you ask me, and I'm more intrigued by your answer than my answer, because I want to hear what you think the Wings need to do, because you have felt a way about the Dallas Wings for 27 consecutive months.
That is a very specific number. That's crazy. Realistic path to contention for Dallas? Like, they are going to have to add some wings at some point. Like, pun intended, laugh emojis, all that good stuff. But, like, they do need more versatility in the wing room. And this is where it really stinks that, like, they just haven't gotten a real Jaylen Brown season. Because I was really intrigued by that preseason run. I was like, okay, she's going to be coming out, either going to be a spot starter or come off the bench. But, like, she helps in that regard. So they aren't. It feels like they're, like, super small in the backcourt. And then you just have the hulking centers. And then it's like, okay, what's the midpoint? So in terms of just general roster construction thoughts, like just having more options in the wing room, I think would be helpful. Do I believe like a healthy Satu plus Arike duo could be your two best players on a championship team? Like loosely, yes, especially if Satu continues to grow. And again, this has gone under the radar because of where the Wings are in the standings, but we already know what kind of bucket getter Arike is. The playmaking continues to improve. And as Steve in particular will continue to note, Arike is leading the W in steals. So there is the level of event creation there, off-ball field. You want more possession-by-possession consistency for Arike on that end. But she has worked on that end. And with Satu, can score at all three levels at this point. Solid multi-positional defender at this point. Would not say she's at the all-defense level, especially not right now. This has been a short run for her. played in the Olympics and here. So she had to get like a full season of work with offseason recovery and stuff like that. But like, I think the potential is there for her to be like, if not full blown all defense level, at the very least within that conversation. Like, here's your 10 within like the 11 to 18 range. Here's Satu for doing a bunch of different things. Like, she has that kind of potential to me. So I think you can build around those two. There is an element of shooting that's needed. In the front court, it's less about like breaking up. I guess inherently, I probably lean towards I would want one of Tierra and Kalani. And that's more so because I would like, I would want a stretch big option in the room somewhere. Or I would like a switchable five in the room somewhere. Where it kind of feels like we have Tierra in this mold. We have Kalani in this mold. And if we ever want to do anything differently scheme-wise defensively, it just has to be Natasha Howard at the five. And like, I think it's important to have a small ball lineup to go to. But like, I don't want that to be the only time you can feel comfortable like switching schemes on top of that. And so, again, Tierra's a talented player. Kalani's a talented player. I think for me, like, I would just want to have some optionality in the room. So choosing between one of those two, especially in light of the salaries that those two are going to command, like Kalani just got paid. Tierra's going to make a lot of money this year. He's going to make a lot of money next year. And then her deal's up. And so just in terms of the financial allocation from there, like if you're able to turn one of those bigs into a wing plus, here's a less, you know, I won't say less. Here's a less expensive option that can do more of the scheme things. So we can throw different stuff at different teams, but like fully committing to one of them. Like if you feel that's Tierra, then okay, can we turn Kalani into one of the wings that we need and then find a more switchable big to back up Tierra or vice versa. If you want to commit to Kalani, can we turn Tierra into a wing and then find that other option to kind of fill out the big room?
Here's my thought though.
Okay.
We've seen this wing team featuring Marina Mabry, featuring Ali Shagre. What's the prototype player to put next to Arika and Satu? Especially as Satu has emerged and probably soaked up a lot of what you expected from that type of player. And so I understand looking at the big room and trying to get more versatile defensively, but how many of those grow on trees? You know, I think you'd probably like to have a switch big, a space big, etc. Just at least you have some versatility. But again, you do have an identity where we're gonna smash you in the paint and hope for the best. So my mind is trying to figure out, so who's that player for them? Like, I think JC Sheldon's development's important, but who's the missing piece?
Well, I think to circle back to your question, because as you mentioned, like, they had Marina, they've had Alicia Gray. Like ideally it's Alicia Gray. Could get the 3-point volume, hits with the drives, really good defender, etc. And I'm thinking just ideal player type to where Arihi's gonna have the ball, Satu's gonna have more of the ball, someone that can take on some on-ball usage, but ultimately is just fine, like filling in. Like, I feel like the perfect player between those two is probably Kayla McBride. Now, Minnesota surely isn't giving her up with how well she's played for them and how well she's playing this year. But, like, just thinking, like, who's the ideal, like, wing to fit in between those two? Like, I think it is Kayla McBride, who can just spot up and knock down shots. There's an element of movement. You can empty a side, say, hey, let's run pick and roll with Satu. And if you're going to switch, here's a quick post up. She can make those passes. If you put two on the ball, it's me. I can slip in some nice feeds. We've seen that in Minnesota. Like, I think that's the type of player you want between those two. To your overall point, I agree. Those players don't grow on trees. Like, this is why Kayla is so valuable, especially as she shot as well as she has this year. But I think that would be the type of player you're looking for. I'm trying to think of, like, who would be, like, a tier down from Kayla.
So the answer is just Rebecca Allen.
she would be helpful.
Now, number one on their list, you do need to make sure that you are able to keep Satu Sabally, or else this conversation
you gotta do that
very quickly. So, I mean, you have the bigs. I think it's probably just adding another piece that you feel comfortable. And maybe you just say, well, you know, Natasha Howard will be a free agent as well. Hey,
Yeah, it gets interesting.
Hey, man.
I think the quote unquote easy, as we had that conversation about tanking, like the easy answer is like, hey, let's see if we can get in for this Juju draft and let's just go out. But like, no, they're not going to do that. To the Satu point, like, I do think I'm pretty sure they will have a core designation available to them. So like, even if Satu does want to go anywhere, they could just say, hey, here's your 1 year max. Can we please work out a long-term deal? If not, hey, we got this 1 year max. We are not about to lose you. Fucking up. So I'll double check her hoop stats real quick, but I believe they will have that core designation available to them. So in the immediate short term, Satu should be a Dallas wing.
Can I make you mad real quick?
Yeah, what's up?
Hey, Kelsey Plum, how you doing? Just want to give you a quick call.
Now, the counterpoint would be, how quick do you think that phone call would be?
I don't think it's a long conversation. It may, in fact, be a text message.
This is one of those, you see the phone ring, you let it ring, miss call in the immediate text. Hey, I'm washing dishes right now. What's up? But
hey, what you need?
Yeah, what's up?
Ooh, can I throw one at you?
What's up?
What do you think about Cheyenne? Specifically for the wings context. A lot of these things you named.
What, scheme versatile?
That man put his head in his hands. Y'all can't see it. It's an audio platform.
This might be some fun pod promo. I'm gonna ask producer Richie for the video. Like, hey, what do you think made me have this reaction? I'm going to respectfully say no. I don't think. No, I don't know if I love that.
You know what? What if they just double down? Say, Lee Yarrue, come on down.
Yeah, I tell you what. Are you ready for a 47 offensive rebound rate by the Dallas Wings, shattering all records in WNBA history?
I think I got one. Are you ready?
What's up?
This might make you mad, and this probably isn't a thing that can happen. What about Kennedy Carter?
I don't think that's gonna. No. Well, shout out to, again, like, we talked about this in like recent watch parties and stuff, which, hey, I do the promo at the end of the pods, but y'all should tap in with us. But either way, like, doesn't feel like a lot's being made of the fact that, like, it's not like Kennedy's on like a 4 year deal in Chicago. Now, I would imagine with how the seasons went, how she's played, how she's connected with Teresa Witherspoon, like, I feel like that's going to be a very quick offseason conversation. Hey, we want you. Here's some dollars. Not some dollars, like, you know, pay her what she's worth. But like, hey, we like you. You really exploded here. Complimentary. We would like to keep you. But, hey, man. We'll see. Like, that gets funny. Looking at her hoop stats, she is a restricted free agent. Hey, if somebody wants to throw a big offer sheet at the Chicago Sky, that could get funny. It may end up being a match anyway, but that's at least a, hey, what does that look like? I don't know if I want that for Dallas, though. Because ultimately, like, as Kennedy has made strides defensively, I don't think she helps that part of the program. But good Lord, good luck defending Kennedy and Arike in the same backcourt. They can just get wherever they want, whenever they want. And if it is a close game, you have those two able to break you down, just create a shot. In clutch scenarios, that gets nasty. But that wouldn't, no, I don't think, I wouldn't prioritize like Kennedy over like getting an actual wing or getting more 3-point shooting in the room. I won't say she won't make them better, but like I wouldn't prioritize that one.
Okay, that's fair.
While we're on Chicago though, like I was trying to think through like the big point and just getting more versatility in the room. Like, while I think, like, I think on balance, like, Tierra McCown is a better player than Breonna Turner. To be clear. But, like, in terms of, hey, commit to one, get some versatility in the room on the other. Like, that would be, like, hey, Tierra for, like, Bree Turner plus something else. to where Bree Turner, who is still like one of the best and most versatile front court defenders in the league. And she hasn't got to play that much in Chicago since, you know, Camilla's getting all the minutes, Angel's playing, et cetera, et cetera. And like, I don't think Chicago would do that because Tierra would command a level of minutes that I don't know if they can allocate to her comfortably with how important Camilla and Angel are to their front court. But like conceptually, it'd be something like that, if that makes sense. Like, let's get the versatile defensive piece of Bree Turner. We don't have to feed her the ball. We don't have to feed her 25 minutes. She gives 18 and we can just do a whole bunch of different stuff. Or if we get to an end the game scenario and like Kalani's getting dinged and pick and roll a little bit, we can go to Bree Turner and feel good about it and still maintain a level of size. Like, that's what I mean more so conceptually. Conceptually. There we go. But there we go. Did you have any more wing thoughts before we move? Okay. All righty. This one coming from David, who says, "Hey, Steve and Nikias, if there were a third team all W, who would be on it?"
Great question. I loved it until I didn't. so pardon me if I sound a little scatterbrained. I'm trying to attempt to go down a rabbit hole very quickly because a thought just popped in my head. So let's do this exercise, the hypothetical third all W team with our hypothetical ballots. So I pretty much had some names locked in. I feel very comfortable with eight names right now, just for all W period.
Yeah.
Asia Wilson, Nafisa Collier, Sabrina Ionescu, Alyssa Thomas, Caitlin Clark, Brianna Stewart, Nneka Nwumike, Kalia Copper, Stamp, we're good.
Okay.
Earlier this year, I had De'Erica Hamby, Kelsey Plum, and Jonquel Jones on my second team.
Okay.
I don't know what to do with my hands, which is also ruining my hypothetical third team.
Your third team, yeah.
Because to have the third team, I need to have the second team locked down. So let's say I keep Kelsey Plum and let's say I keep Jonquel Jones. Do not quote me on that, right?
Mm-hmm. And to be clear, we're going to do like an official like end of season awards episode. So hang tight, folks.
So I probably will go ahead and put Arike on that list. Second in scoring, first in steals, salute. Ooh, probably go Jackie Young. I put De'Erica Hamby on that third. Yeah, you know, this is where it gets very interesting and very unfun for me. Because Dawana Bonner, come on down. And that leaves me with one person, right? Hey, Kayla McBride. great season you had there. Now, do I feel comfortable and confident with what I just said and did? Not specifically. Kelsey Mitchell's right there. So now I don't want to see. Not Kayla McBride. Now it's got to be Kelsey Mitchell. This is why we don't have a third team.
Well, to take the baton quickly from Steve here, as I was thinking through, I did the same exercise. Like, okay, I need to be confident on who like my 10 names would be, at the very least for all W. And so like I landed on, then we got the same eight. Like Asia Fee, Stewie, Nneka, AT, Sabrina, Caitlin, Clea Copper. Jonquel and Jackie were my other two for right now, at the very least. And it's like, okay, we got 10. Now let's figure out who these next five are going to be. Steve, I have 14 names in my notes for these five spots. Yeah, man. Yeah. 14 right. spots for these five names. And like, and as we've had conversations in the past, both on the NBA and the W side, where like, you know, for MVP, record matters this much. But for all, you know, the all league teams, all NBA, all W, like, can be a tiebreaker, but it doesn't matter as much. It's more so, let's celebrate individual excellence, et cetera, right? And so as far as a lock on the hypothetical third team, Arike's there and De'Erica Hamby's there, even though like post-Olympic break has not been super kind to De'Erica Hamby. But those two are for sure in for me. And then it's just like, I feel good about Ezzie Madbigore. growth offensively, has played, has performed at least up until this recent stretch at a defensive player of the year level. Like, okay, cool. And then I was like, where do I go? You want to hear the names that I have been considering in this?
Yeah, let's go.
So names I'm considering to fill out these final two spots. Alanna Smith, Kayla McBride, Brittany Griner, who just meets my like games played threshold. League average games played is like 33. You want to look at 70% of games. It's about, yeah, about 23, 24 games. So she, Brittany Griner just gets in there. In terms of being eligible. But either way, Brittany Griner's a name. Aaliyah Boston, Kelsey Mitchell, Kelsey Plum, Alicia Gray, Tina Charles, the Storm Guards, and Skylar Diggins-Smith and Jewel Lloyd, Dawana Bonner. Also Angel Reese.
This is the rabbit hole I wanted to go on.
Go.
Now, before we get back to your list, very quickly. So Angel Reese leads the WNBA in rebounding.
Mm-hmm.
And I currently am trying to, again, prepare folks to see when's the last time the rebound leader in the WNBA did not make an all-W team. I am at 2021, and we're still not there. So if you want to continue to reveal, I will pop in if I find a year where the rebound leader did not make all-W. But I'm telling you right now, folks, there's a very good chance that Angel Reese is second team all WNBA.
And I'm sure we would all be super normal about that if that were to occur. I will say, like, I feel like the tough thing about the rebound leader is like it's generally accompanied by, hey, I'm averaging like 18.
Ah, Sylvia Fowles disagrees.
Well, and that's also Sylvia Fowles, former league MVP. You know what I mean? But like,
Candace Parker averaged 14 points this year. No,
that's also Candace Parker. You get my general point. Gosh darn it! But no, in all seriousness, and I'm just trying to make sure I ain't forgetting anybody else that at least deserves consideration for this. Like, talk about meeting the game's play threshold. Like, Ryan just meets it, but, like, I can't get there with Ryan this year. That's probably it. Well, I guess the other name I would have to mention in this would be Kennedy. She's at 28 games, 17 points per game. But, like,
I have found it. I didn't mean to interrupt. I found it. 2018. Mm-hmm. Sylvia Fowles, 17.7 points, 11.9 rebounds. Did not make all W. And I believe that was because hashtag centers. So it was Liz Cambage and Brittany Griner.
Ah.
There we go. The streak is over. Continue.
That'll do. Okay. Well, see, this is why we do the Gosh Darn podcast. Good stuff for Steve. From Steve. But yeah, it's a lot of names. And then that just goes into like, okay, do I want to get the Lynx a third? Do I want to give them a second period? Like, if I do I want to get them a third? Like, who's been the most impactful between Atlanta and Kayla McBride? That type of beat. And then you zoom out from that conversation and it's like, okay, well then have they been more impactful than, you know, a BG, either Kelsey, Alicia? I feel like this is about to be another season in which the things that Alicia Gray does on both ends of the floor is just going to go under the radar because the Atlanta Dream have had an interesting basketball season. Yeah, like it's a lot of guard / wings that are having these type of like all W third-team type seasons.
Okay, I found another one. 2015, Courtney Paris.
Ah, well, shout out Courtney Paris. How about that?
I found yet another one. 20 once again, Courtney Paris.
It is a hashtag what she does.
Yeah, well, yeah, there goes that. All right, so who did you eventually pick?
I landed on Alicia Gray. And she's also like all defense team shortlist for me. But like to echo your sentiment, like, do I feel super confident about that? Probably not. Because then it's just like, well, hey, Caleb McBride's right there type beat. So it's like it's awarding A links, and I win Atlanta because of the defense. So Arike Diakahan beat Eze Atlanta, Alicia would be where I'm at. Now, if we did a hypothetical all W fourth team, however.
Go ahead. Give me your hypothetical all W fourth team.
I'm not going to do that.
Too. Who is it?
Okay. I mean, technically, I have enough names to get to the 15, but like, we don't have to. We do not have to do that. There are a lot of talented players in the WNBA. I guess that's where I ultimately land on this. And that's where you should land as well, David. So thank you for your question. Next one going to come from Connor, who says, and I quote, "Aha, feeling good, feeling great. I hope you guys are doing well. I recently tore my left Achilles playing pickup. Yikes. Hope the recovery is going well. And have been on bed rest after surgery watching 30 for 30s. Running an Oregon Ducks dynasty in college football and listening to my favorite sports podcast."
Go Ducks!
There you go. I feel like this entire like introductory paragraph is just so Steve-coded. Outside of the injury. I ain't speaking that on you. But, you know, Oregon Ducks dynasty, yeah. Anyway, I'm currently listening to the All Gold Everything episode, and I am really appreciating you both highlighting the significance of the special moment of watching LeBron, KD, and Steph play on the same team competitively, looking at you, All-Star Game, and winning an Olympic gold medal. I really do believe that this team and this run should and probably will get its own 30 for 30 or other type documentary one day. My question is, what moments in recent years would you make your own 30 for 30 type documentary for, and what would it focus on and why, men's and women's? I'm curious to see what stories you guys think are worthy of telling. Thanks for a great show as always. Dunker Nation, let's ride.
Ha. I think the Aces would be very fun. I would like to see that. Mm-hmm, I think like Victor Wembanyama, San Antonio Spurs content, like over the chunk of that would be very fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be interesting to see the Liberty process, like after it was done, whatever this run is, what that looks like trying to chase them. Mm-hmm. South Carolina women's basketball would be interesting. Mm-hmm. Where else can I go? The Portland Trailblazers, Brandon Roy, Greg Oden era, just because I want to be sad for a little bit. What else? What else we got? Those are the ones off the top of my KD Warriors, Steph Curry Warriors, the Warriors in general, honestly. I'd enjoy a definitive Heat LeBron deal. Just LeBron in general, for being honest. Kevin Durant, I think, if he was able to tell his story. James Harden, if he was able to tell his story. And there's some fun ones out there. That's all I got off the top of my head.
Okay. I like that. I'm glad you mentioned Don Staley in South Carolina, because that was one of the first names I thought about. Like, I would just like to learn more about how it has accelerated to this degree and this level of dominance that program has been able to build. So Don's certainly up there. I need like a legit 30 for 30 on that Aces Storm series from 2022.
We don't need that. We don't need that.
We don't need that.
It's going to be one of them short 15-minute episodes. It's going to be Chelsea-grade jumpers all over the place, and then a camera pans to Sue Bird seething, who walks off.
Oh, my goodness. Or at the very least, what, the game three? Game two to game three? At the very least, don't that game. That's just one of the best playoff games I've ever seen. And one of the wildest endings I had seen. I'd like to see something on that. This may already exist, so I'll just put that out there as a disclaimer. But like, similar to the LeBron Heat type beat, like, can we get like an actual 30 for 30 on what the LeBron Wade Melo, like how that went down and how it ended in Melo just taking the not opting out a year early, or not taking the deal that gave him the opt out early? And like, why that happened. So I guess just general big three formation type beat. How that happened. I'm trying to think, what else would I like to see? Sign me up for any 2017 Eagles content. What else we got here? But yeah, we'll leave it right there, I suppose. Did you have any more come to mind?
No. I'm sure they'll come after we hit like stop record.
Like, oh my God, what about? Yeah, I got you. All right, well, next I'm going to come from Thomas, who says, hey, y'all, love the recent episode with Matt Riccardi and the wide-ranging discussion, an all-time dunker spot for me. In discussing his D3 experience, Matt mentioned that he learned to listen and find out what people's love language is when it comes to basketball. In that vein, what would y'all say your basketball love language is, and how did you realize it? As a fellow D3 hoop alum, shout out Grinnell College, I feel like my basketball love language is an above-the-break transition three off of a turnover, along with the entirety of 621 to 501 in the third quarter of the 2014 NBA Finals. And let me just say, one, I appreciate the question. That's great. As I've just like tried to memory hold the 2014 Finals as a concept, I went back to that stretch. Do you know how quickly I turned that off?
You made it like a minute, I think, maybe two possessions.
I was like, hey, you know what? Never mind. Just, man, that entire season was. So Steve, you saw my tweets last year during the Eagle season to where like they were good, but I never felt like they were as good as they could have been, and it never felt right. And I was just mad even when they were winning games and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that was just like 90 plus games of Miami Heat basketball during the 13-14 season. It was not great. It was not good. You just felt the weight of it ends in that finals. They couldn't stop a darn nosebleed. Oh man.
And then it ended.
It sure did. Freaking a Sports Illustrated. Cover on my timeline.
I think I've told that story before. I was at Summer League in Orlando. It was halftime of the championship game when that happened.
Oh, that's funny. So everyone was super keyed in on that.
Oh, man. It was just a collective.
Like, oh, my God.
Hey, Safe Space.
Yeah, what's up?
I'm trying to find anybody in a Heat polo.
I bet so.
I'm just trying to get a glance.
Hey, yo, big dog, how you feel? Hey, y'all got Shabazz, though. Okay, anyway. This was not supposed to be how this pod ended. Oh, man. Shout out to the 2014 basketball Spurs. But Steve, okay, what would you say is your basketball love language?
Wait, what's your love language? I thought you were going to flow right into it. You just got upset. Well, okay.
Let me decompress.
Defensive rotations off the top of my head. I love a good defensive rotation. Love a good scram switch. Love a help the helper type scenario where it's not perfect, but everyone did their job and they recovered out of it. Love a good possession of like good defense and good offense. Like both teams just going at it. A very well-timed back screen has always been a fun one for me. Mm-hmm. I love a backdoor cut. Well-timed backdoor cut will get me every time. Let's see. Fake dribble handoffs I enjoy.
Like that.
I'm trying to think. Running through a passing lane for a steal. Mm-hmm. Good rotations on the weak side. X outs. It's a lot more than Steve likes defense.
Yeah.
Love defense, man. Oh, pull-up transition. Like, the Chauncey Billups, Tracy McGrady. Yeah, I'm about to just pull up.
Yeah, I'm on one.
Yeah.
Bop.
That's always been fun. Yeah. I did too many.
The wheel breakers. I feel you. What was it, like seven love languages?
Hey, I'll be loving the game.
Potential title question mark? But anyway, I think for me, it starts with a well-executed Spain pick and roll. I think we start the bidding there. That gets me. Beyond that, give me a well-timed angle flip. Person getting out of there. A well-timed slip against the switch as the best way to beat a switch, etc. I'm trying to think, what else? Skip pass to the corner, to the weak side corner where you get two. I love a good skip pass. just in general, like two on the ball, you could do, if you can do that skip pass against two on the ball or just short roll fun out of two on the ball, like that always gets me going. Well, an easy one that you poke at me about, hey, get the fancy fast break dunk. Always warms the heart because, I mean, you know, you care, et cetera. Trying to think. That probably does it as far as, like, specific basketball actions. But we can get into, like, player archetype stuff, but I don't think that counts as, like, love language things. Those are just preferences that I enjoy. So then we go there. Smooth deceleration on the drive. You know, shout out James Harden. Shout out Giannis. Shout out Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Appreciate y'all. Y'all hit the brakes. Person in front of you can't guard you in a way, and then you slow down. They're like, they got a hack. And even if they do, it's an and one. It's kind of tough. But yeah, I think we leave it there. Circling back to the 30 for 30 front, you know what I want, Steve? It's very Nikias Peeled. I'm ready for the eye roll. Can we get something on, like, the Chris Paul OKC season?
I think we do every time Shai does something well.
Well.
Did we get that one in the whole article?
So, hey, give me another one. I mean, I guess related to that, just the Lou Dort game 7? It's like, what the? But no. Or whichever game that was where the man just could not miss from 3. And everybody's like, wait a minute, who is this? But yeah, I guess we'll cap it there. Any closing basketball thoughts before we get out of here, Steve?
Nope.
Okay, fair enough. In that case, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions / sharing funny tweets in there, and also, like, watch party references, which reminds me, you should join the Dunker Spot online watch party community. Come rock with us. The link is in the podcast description. Click on that. Create your profile. It's free. No shenanigans. We are talking / watching a lot of hoop. There are also various other things that we put on screen. A lot of video game stuff, a lot of YouTube stuff. We just chill out, vibe out, talk about life, talk about music, all of the things. So if you want to chill with some cool, inclusive folks, come rock with us. We have a lot of fun. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Gershon Nikias, why didn't the mayor do that?